Hey everyone, Ben here. We're going to get to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast in just a second. Connor Dirks from truthaboutit.net joined me to help discuss what we saw in the Wizards win over the Milwaukee Bucks. John Wall came back. Okay. I mean, I don't think he looked all the way back, but he looked effective, and the Wizards were certainly effective in a good win. Before I get into the podcast, just want a quick reminder again. I've started a new college basketball podcast called Basketball in the DMV. You can find it on patreon.com/Ben Standig. It's got a little bit of a crowdfunding element to it. If you guys are interested in college basketball, Georgetown, Maryland, GW, George Mason, whatever the team is in town, if I can get there, if I can get people from that school, that team to talk to me, people from, you know, insiders, reporters, whatever else that's interesting, I'm down with it. I'm going to post my third episode today. If you are a member, a patron as it were, you will get immediate access to the podcast. Otherwise, it'll be released to the public a few days later, plus some other goodies, which you can find all the details on patreon.com/Ben Standig. And we'll see. In time, I may have some Wizards NBA stuff on there as well. So please check that out. Greatly appreciate it. If you've got any advice, suggestions, hit me up at Ben Standig or email bstandig1@gmail.com. All right, let's get into this. Here we go. Connor Dirks from truthaboutit.net joins me. We talk Wizards win, a Wizards win. To another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast, and we are talking about a win. How about that? Not only are we talking about a Wizards win, 99-88 at the Milwaukee Bucks, we are talking also about the 2017-18 season debut for Mr. Connor Dirks here on the podcast. Mr. Dirks, how are things doing over there in Truth About It land?
Pretty good tonight. This is a game I was worried about for a few weeks. So to get a win and to get it kind of, you know, in the second half the hard way feels pretty good.
You know, I have to say, I believe this exact game, essentially, the fight, I think it was the first game against Milwaukee last year, was the frightful game where Milwaukee just looked superhuman against the Wizards and just blew them out of the gym. I believe I did that recap with your boy Kyle Wiedei, and so I kept thinking to myself, this is a game I should get Kyle for, but I'm very happy that we got you on. You're hardly a surrogate, but you are your own voice, and I'm glad to get your take, not just on this game, but on the Wizards as a whole. And we should note, you just told me this before we started, you have been to three games this year, you're undefeated, and we've now learned the Wizards can win in Toronto without John Wall, but not without Connor Dirks. You went to the first game that they played and they beat the Raptors, but you were not there Sunday and they lost. I think there's not a coincidence.
That's right. No, no John Wall in either, but one Connor Dirks. And actually, you mentioned Kyle Wiedei. He was there with me. So, you know, maybe it was Kyle, maybe it was me, but either way, they got to win.
Oh, no, we're giving you the credit. Until Kyle gets on this podcast this year, I know he's busy, but he gets no credit.
Yeah, well, I'm fine with that.
All right, so we're going to get into what happened in this game. Some good stuff out of Bradley Beal, the bench, even maybe a little Jan Mahimi, maybe. We'll get into that here on the Locked On Wizards podcast. You can, of course, find us on iTunes or anywhere else you do your podcasting. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, you can find Connor. He is at Connor D. Dirks. Connor is C-O-N-O-R D. Dirks. I am at Ben Standig. And Connor, let's just get right into this. You said this was a game you were worried about a little bit. I was as well because, I mean, Giannis, it feels like you're dealing with, like the Monstars or something. I mean, you know, he's got all that length. He's putting up crazy numbers. The Wizards, they do get John Wall back, but he had just missed the last game with that, with a knee issue, so you don't quite know where he's at. Otto Porter had to have a checkup on his wrist. He came back okay, but, you know, so you got a lot of things going on. And look, it's on the road. This is the first back-to-back of the year. There was a lot to be concerned with. And for three quarters, it was anybody's game. But right at the end of the third quarter, Bradley Beal took control. He had, I think, seven straight points basically to end the quarter. And then the bench, kept it going to start the fourth. We'll get into some specific topics, but just in general, what for you was sort of the thing where you're like, oh, okay, I kind of like that today.
Okay, so you mentioned Giannis. He still had what I think many people would be jealous about and call a pretty good game. 23 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 blocks. But what I wanted to note is that he and Otto actually played the exact same amount of minutes down to the second, 39 minutes and 10 seconds. And Otto did a nice job generally on his own, 22 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals. So I think, you know, you mentioned Giannis looked superhuman last year and turning him into just human. I mean, no crack on Otto Porter, but, you know, having him have an Otto Porter stat line rather than a, you know, top 5 player in the NBA stat line, it makes all the difference. And, you know, you see the Wizards win by 11. And I think a lot of that is, you know, just keeping Giannis into a box of a really good player, but not, you know, a superstar.
Yeah, you know, the first half in particular, it felt like Milwaukee was missing a bunch of shots around the rim. I think Steve Buckhantz was saying in the broadcast he couldn't remember a team missing as many close shots as the Bucks did. So, you know, I don't quite know if the Wizards were, say, playing spectacular defense on Milwaukee, but they were certainly active, and they made Giannis work. He finished 8 for 21. Yeah, he did miss, you know, some shots where you normally think, boy, that's going to go in, and then it didn't. But, you know, if nothing else, they were active. You mentioned Otto. He had some help. I mean, I mentioned Jan Mahimi. I'm not saying Jan Mahimi had a, you know, we're not going to go crazy. But at least a couple times in the fourth quarter where the thing we expect out of Jan Mahimi to play defense, to be a factor. I remember at least one play, Giannis turned on somebody and he went towards baseline and he threw up a wild shot that basically kind of missed everything. And it was because Mahimi was there, and obviously Mahimi's a pretty tall dude. And Giannis, you know, tried to lob it, you know, put it over him, and he missed it. And, you know, just collectively, they seem to be active. And that's what you need, obviously, against Giannis. Despite his scoring, he's averaging over 30 a game. Milwaukee is one of the bottom teams in the league in scoring on the year. Now, a lot of that comes prior to Eric Bledsoe, who's been there now, I think, like 6 games.
Right.
And he didn't have a huge game, 14 points. He did have 6 steals, which is pretty nice, but only 2 assists.
Yeah, not bad.
But yeah, they just didn't. Milwaukee's never really had a second guy to sort of get going. They just, like I said, missed a bunch of shots. Felt like around the rim, they finished 44. I guess they missed a bunch of shots from deep. They finished 4 of 22 from 3. Yeah, in this one.
Yeah, you know, Jan Mahimi. Actually, I remember the play you're talking about. He definitely altered that shot, and Giannis basically tried to launch it way over him, and just missed everything. You know, the give and take with Mahimi in this one is that, you know, he had a couple really goofy offensive fouls that just, you know, didn't make much sense. Both were away from the ball. One was, you know, about half the court away from the ball. And so there's a bit of a give and take there, but you're right. I mean, that shot altering is in large part why the Wizards liked him and were willing to pay him so much. And we haven't seen all that much of it. So aside from everything else, it's good to see that, you know, he has it in him. And if he can, you know, cut down on the fouls and try to, you know, touch the ball without turning it over, then, you know, maybe he can, you know, start adding something to the team.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned those fouls. There were at least 2, he had 5 in 12 and a half minutes. There were at least 2 that I noticed where he just completely, like, trucks a guy. I think I made a joke, like, on Twitter, something like, boy, he hits harder than Deion Sanders, Tony Romo probably.
That's right.
I mean, he's definitely going to me. Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to, like, get some tough plays, but you can't make it so obvious that the refs have no choice but to call it on you.
Right. No one likes to call off-ball fouls like that. But when, you know, the guy ends up, like, flattened and you're, you know, running over him, then not much choice there.
Right. You mentioned Otto Porter. 12 points, 11 rebounds. Gortat had 15 rebounds. The Wizards out-rebounded them 46-33. And, you know, again, it's not like the Wizards are a small team. But, you know, I don't view them as, like, a great rebounding team, whereas Milwaukee, again, it's probably just, you know, the sort of superhero vision I have of Giannis, all arms and legs. But they got a lot of other, you know, guys. I mean, John Henson's got some of that. Thon Maker's on that team. And the Wizards, you know, really wreck them on the boards overall. You know, obviously, if Otto's getting 11, that's a pretty good day. You know, not that he can't rebound, but just, you know, just to get that sheer number is pretty good.
Yeah, I thought that was a great sign. And I think I accidentally said Otto had 22 points earlier. You're right, it's 12. What was interesting is that, you know, all the Wizards players that played, if you look at plus minus, were in the single digits, and it was all positive. But Otto was at plus 22, and he also played the most minutes. So some variance there is expected. But I think, you know, the scoring total wasn't overly impressive. He shot okay, 41% overall. What was really impressive is how he was just everywhere, getting the boards, you know, being in the right place in the right time, either help defense, funneling guys into other defenders. I just thought he was really, really, really impressive all game long, and stuff that, you know, doesn't – he's not always all that comfortable on defense, so it was good to see that, especially against an opponent that's so hard to handle.
You know, it's funny. I just looked at it. I was just looking at it while you were mentioning. So, yeah, Otto, a plus 22. Nobody else better than Tim Frazier's plus 8. Bradley Beal, who led the way with 23 points. He was a plus 3. John Wall, who did play 31 minutes, was a plus 3. But it's basically because Otto started the second and the fourth quarter with the bench. Now, the second quarter didn't really work out so well. They immediately, as per usual, they come into the quarter up 8, they again outscored 7, and they were getting, they even lost the lead there for a little bit in the second quarter. But in the fourth quarter is when things really, they really pulled away. As I said, Bradley Beal, I think, scored the last 7 points in the third, but then in the fourth with Otto in the bench, they really got it going. Oubre scored a bunch, Jody Meeks had some buckets, and
Giannis was still in the game at that point, so that was really impressive.
Yeah, Giannis played right the same. By the way, it's kind of crazy to me. The Wizards play their first back-to-back of the year, the last NBA team to do it. This is the second game. So you would think, on some logical level, that the second game of the back-to-back, maybe you go deeper with the bench. Scott Brooks went the other way. He, instead of playing his usual 10, he only went 9. Forget no Jason Smith, also no Mike Scott again. It's just funny.
Right. I
mean, again, if you're going to play Otto 39 minutes, then somebody else is going to lose minutes.
And Otto got checked out after the last game too. So if anyone was, you know, other than John Wall, was maybe going to get their minutes cut down a little bit, you'd think it was Otto. Instead, like you said, Brooks goes the other way and plays him a game high 39 minutes.
Absolutely. All right, we're here on the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standing along with Connor Dirks from TruthAboutIt.net. I want to now, Connor, you had some thoughts on Twitter that I want to get your to let you expand your thoughts on, specifically on the point guard, Tim Frazier. We're going to do that here in just one second here on the Locked On Wizards podcast. All right, so since this is your first opportunity to really express yourself, you know, beyond, well, I guess it's 280 characters now, you're writing, but you know, in terms of this format, you get to go at it. Since you were talking Tim Frazier, you seem to have some thoughts on him. The Wizards' backup point guard spot, always a highly controversial position. It has been the equivalent of the Spinal Tap drummer. It feels like over the years they just can't quite figure out a great answer. I don't think Tim Frazier's been awful, but when he's not been good, it's been obviously not so good. What was your take on him today, and where are you at with the whole Tim Frazier experience overall?
So today, I thought he had one of the worst, probably the worst Tim Frazier half I've seen all year, and that was the first half for a few reasons. I mean, him and Meeks are always going to be very dangerous on defense if they're on the court together, and a few times they just got completely lost, you know, whether they were switching or whether they were just kind of getting bullied around. You know, they couldn't quite compete on defense. But on offense, I mean, he was just doing some wacky stuff. Double clutch passes that he was trying to wrap around, you know, a few defenders, getting caught up in the air, running up the shot clock without, you know, running much of an offense. Just a really bad half in the first half. But then in the second half, you know, I really have to credit him. He kind of turned it around, especially in what you were talking about earlier, that early fourth quarter run. But he did such a much better job finding Jody Meeks in places where Jody Meeks can actually do something. And as you know, Meeks is a nice player to have on the team. But if you don't kind of facilitate him in a way where he can be successful, he can't do that much. So finding him running to the basket or open for a three is the way to go. And Frazier did a really nice job there. And basically he did a nice job. I'm trying to say this in a way that's complimentary and doesn't sound rude, but staying out of it mostly, getting the ball to the right guy at the right time, not forcing these crazy drives or these really, you know, dramatic plays where he's, you know, making a miracle pass or a miracle shot. And that's great. And, you know, another game that I saw him play really well in is when I was up in Toronto earlier this season with Kyle Widai. Frazier played really well, almost had double-digit assists, I think, in that game, and just did a really nice job facilitating. Again, after a slow start in that game as well. Overall, I'm not, you know, Frazier started off the year really badly. And over the last, Kyle mentioned it on Twitter tonight, but over the last eight or so games, he's looked a little better. if we're ranking Wizards backup point guards, I'm not sure he's gotten to, like, you know, the inestimable Andre Miller or Ramon Sessions level, but he'd be above Eric Maynor on the rankings for me.
You're right. I mean, he's definitely better than Trey Burke. He's definitely better than Eric Maynor. Andre Miller was just a whole other level. I mean, it was, you know, we got the tail end of a guy who was, you know, probably just outside a Hall of Fame level career, or, you know, somewhere in that. Like, he'll get
arguable.
Like, he'll get like a vote or something, but, you know, whether he gets it or not. You know, Sessions certainly had his flaws, but he was very good at getting to the basket and scoring and just giving you a consistent presence, and they just haven't had that since he left. The point that I made, I had your colleague Adam Rubin on yesterday's podcast, and it's with Frazier, but it's with the bench as a whole. It just seems like all these guys are sort of put in a position to fail when Brooks puts them out there together, because none of them are, there's really no single guy who can be the focal point. We're not going to go with Oubre yet. Again, he had a good game today, and there's been some signs of growth, but he's not there by any stretch. So when you're out there together, especially for Frazier, the point guard, he doesn't have anywhere to lean on. He has to do it all himself, and that's not his game. He's not big enough. But when he has people to distribute the ball to, like when he played with the starters in Toronto, or having a guy like Otto on the court who can, you know, be at that focal point, he just looks more comfortable in that way. And that's why I would just like to see Brooks keep staggering the starters more. It seems like it helps Frazier and Meeks in particular.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's a weird lineup out there with Oubre, Frazier, Meeks, and Mahinmi. And I think Otto was out there as well for a bit, but it just couldn't get anything going in the early second quarter. Looked really bad. Just looked like, you know, they never got inside the 3-point line almost. They were just kind of passing it around, and every time they made a foray in, it would end in a turnover or a really badly missed shot. So in the fourth quarter, it just seemed like he and Meeks and Porter figured it out a little bit more and found a way to find those holes in Milwaukee's defense, whereas earlier in the game, they looked like they couldn't crack the code.
Yeah, so some positive signs there. By the way, I should mention before I forget, the Wizards, they close out this three-game road stand Wednesday against Charlotte, then it's Thanksgiving, and then they are back home against Portland. Thanksgiving, you got any rocking plans, or are you a football turkey guy, or do you have some more exotic traditions in the Dirks household?
Well, I, the Dirks household is going to be far from where I am. I'm going up to my wife's family's house in Maine. And you know what? I don't really know what to expect other than her whole family, which I'm sure will be lovely. I think last time I went up there, it was mostly just, standard turkey and lots and lots and lots of food.
So that's pretty interesting. You're going into a Thanksgiving completely with a complete unknown situation. That is that'll be good for you.
That's right. And then the extremely comfortable confines of the state of Maine in late November, which I'm sure, it'll be ice cold and my face will fall off. So,
oh yeah,
of course, happy to be with family.
I've only been to Maine in the summer.
It's nice then.
The general rule is I try not to go anywhere north of New York City once we get from Thanksgiving on. That's my, I'm not like, I may go to Boston for Christmas for a certain basketball game, but other than that, I'm not trying to go crazy here.
Yeah, generally, I don't think there's a reason to expose yourself to that kind of weather.
Yeah, well, Greg, you do it for the wife, you do it for the in-laws, you do all that thing. From a Wizard standpoint, I'll be overly corny here, since again we haven't had you on this year. The Wizards are now 10-7, so 17 games into the season. What are you most thankful for the Wizards this season? At this point, 17 games into the season.
All right, so this is relatively easy for me. I think I can give you a confident answer. I'm most thankful for, and I had a post about this last week, but I think I'm most thankful for Bradley Beal's improved game near the basket, especially with his shot from behind the arc being off. I think it's just a huge addition to his game. And it's going to allow him to, be that more of a Dwayne Wade type player than he has been in the past. I know he's always gotten comparisons for, how pure his stroke is and his 3-point shooting. He became the, youngest player in NBA history to hit 700 3-pointers tonight.
Oh yeah.
Congrats to him. Him adding that game close to the basket and his finishing near the basket has been really incredible this year. Career high in free throw attempts, career high in percentage around the basket, and relying less on assisted baskets as well. For the first time in his career, he is under 50% of his points are coming from assisted baskets. It's around 45%. Or at least was when I wrote the post last week. So I'm thankful for that. A close second, I guess, would be I continue to be thankful for Kelly Oubre. I think if he continues on his path, he's going to be an actual asset for the Wizards. And they've long, long needed someone that they can rely on to play defense off the bench and kind of spark that second unit. Not there yet, though.
The Beal dribble drive game. I mean, so is this such a difference? I mentioned those 7 points at the end of the third quarter. I mean, he had two layups. One of them, he just looked, like Adrian Peterson running through the line of scrimmage, but like while dribbling, he had like that type of intensity. He knew what he was doing. He wasn't afraid. He did it with a vengeance. And, you know, that just wasn't part of his game a couple years ago, at least not consistently.
No, it really wasn't.
He's been much better by getting to the line. I mean, although he only had two attempts today and in the last game, I don't think he had any. So, these things even out on some level. But, totally with you there. And it's to the point where, you know, I've thought the last year or two that, you know, when he's end of quarter, end of game situations, he's the guy that I would like to see have the ball in his hands more than Wall because he gives you a shooting threat. But now that he can get all the way to the basket, and obviously he's a great 3-point shooter, he's not a chucker. I mean, he's not one of these guys who you're like, oh boy, he's going to get the ball and immediately shoot. He'll do what's right. It just makes him such a threat. So it's going to be interesting to see that how that shakes out. Lastly here, from me, what's your, I don't know. What do you think? I mean, bigger picture here that what are they now? 10-7, you know, you on one level, you can look at it and say, you know, considering they didn't have Markieff Morris early on, considering Wall's been a little banged up, is trying to figure out the bench, 10-7's not terrible. They obviously though. Oh, and I don't think I even said, they've now, in six of the last seven games, held an opponent under 100 points. They've held them, actually, those opponents 95 or under in six of those seven. So since that Dallas loss, that they have picked it up defensively, good signs on that front. But, they have had some inexplicable losses. That Miami game just a couple games ago, the inevitable, they come home after a win and look lethargic early and had a fight their way back just to even have a chance to potentially win it, even though they didn't. What are you, bigger picture here, like, what are you seeing? Are you seeing a team that's, you still vibing the title contender part, or you have a little more concerns than you did at the beginning of the year?
Probably the latter. Although, like you said, there's some reasons to be really optimistic. And, in terms of a player growth standpoint, I'm pretty impressed with, Beal, Porter, and Oubre. I mean, they all seem really improved from last season. So there's a lot to be happy about there. But I can't get over it. And I can't get over those really bad losses to the Suns, to the Lakers, and to the Mavericks. And so it's disappointing in a way that they're only 10-7 when, you win those games and they're 13-4. And I think that, you can't let them off the hook. They're not a 13-4 team. They're a 10-7 team right now. But they have the potential to be that 13-4 team at this point in the season. And, it'll really be on them to, make good on it and actually win those games consistently. I'm not going to blame them for, the Miami loss the other day. It's really hard to win both games of a home and home like that. Miami came out crazy fast, crazy good in that second game. So the Wizards did all they could to come back. Not going to hold it against them. But those three losses I mentioned really sting and are the difference between a team that looks dominant and a team that looks like, they have a chance to be better than they've been, but haven't actually, put it on paper yet.
Yeah, no, I mean, the bigger picture when it comes to, how many wins can you get, where are you going to be a seed, losing those games, it's probably going to come back to bite them. And you mentioned the record. I mean, what made tonight so important, we'll see what they do against Charlotte. I mean, Charlotte is, first time we'll have seen them this year. They're 6-9. But they've won their last two, and it feels like they always play the Wizards tough. I feel the same way about Milwaukee, and the Wizards have actually won, I think, 4 out of 5 against Milwaukee now. But
right,
you get past Charlotte, then you got Portland at home, then at Minnesota, at Philadelphia, two teams that are certainly much improved. Home against Detroit, they've already beaten Detroit, but the Pistons are ahead of them in the standings. Then to go on the road trip at Utah, at Portland, at a Phoenix team that they beat them. at the Clippers, then at Brooklyn, potentially another chance for a Connor Dirk sighting there. Oh, no, wait, no, not your
I'm back in D.C., Ben.
Never mind. Yeah, well, maybe you'll still go there anyway. Who knows? What do I know?
That's right.
But so the schedule, I mean, it's getting, you know, a lot of road games, which is just difficult no matter who you're playing. So it's why it would have been nice to bank those wins. Nonetheless, you know, maybe in another podcast, I'll look ahead and project what their schedule needs to, what their record needs to be after they get done with that West road trip. But nonetheless, it's going to be interesting to see where they're at here coming up once they, now the tougher opponents on the road. And yeah, we'll see if those bad losses that they had were, you know, canaries in the coal mine or aberrations. Something like
right.
That.
You know, it doesn't matter at the end of the day if they run off, you know, 5-6 wins on the playing against these all these teams that are, you know, largely playoff teams or at least teams with playoff aspirations. They can rattle off a bunch of wins and, you know, we might forget about those early season losses to really awful teams. But, you know, as it stands, they're going to have to prove that they're a team that consistently beats teams that aren't in contention.
Absolutely. All right, man. Well, great job out of you. No rust in your game. You got the analysis.
Thanks, Ben.
Down pat. Go follow Connor on Twitter at Connor D. Dirks. Go read his stuff on truthaboutit.net. And I'm just telling you right now, if you're gonna come at Connor, you best come good because the dude will come back at you with words you've never even heard of. So just be warned. That's all I'm gonna say.
Well, thank you, Ben. As always, it was a pleasure.
All right, man. I definitely appreciate it. Thanks, you guys, for listening. Back with another podcast tomorrow. I think you guys are going to another good guest. I'll keep it as a surprise, but another good guest coming up as we head into the Thanksgiving holiday. So until next time, see ya.
Deal gets open for three. Dagger!
Home run, off balance shot.